Hi, I'm Kathy Forstein, music director at KC Cafe Radio. We're very happy to have Chuck McDowell, vocalist, songwriter, and guitarist for the band Isobo, as a KC Cafe Radio artist. We're proud to be playing songs from their album 4 on the station. Isobo means eclectic selections of everything but opera. Isobo's music is exactly that, a blend of rock, pop, folk, blues, country, and just about any style you can think of, with amazing musicianship by Chuck McDowell and Gail Burnett. Thanks, Chuck, so much for taking the time to talk with me here on KC Cafe Radio.
Well, it's so great to be with you, Kathy.
We just saw each other at Folk Alliance, and I was just wondering, how did you enjoy your trip here, and what all did you do while you were there at Folk Alliance?
Well, I heard a bunch of music, met a lot of really nice people, and ate some unbelievable barbecue.
Where did you go?
The first place I went to was Jack Stack's.
Mm-hmm.
And went there twice, and then went to, is it AJ's?
Uh-huh. I think that's
Is that right. AJ's Barbecue? I think, yeah, that's where it was. It's not as upscale as Jack's, but
No.
You could tell it had been very authentic and really made and huge portions. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'd say half the people that were in that restaurant that night were from Folk Alliance. It was really fun.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah, everybody in Kansas City has their own barbecue place that they like the best, and Jack Stack's, I think, is right there close to where they have Folk Alliance. But my favorite place is a place called Q39, and it's down on 39th Street. So next time you come back to Kansas City, you need to try that one out.
Absolutely.
When you're at Folk Alliance, do you do a lot of networking? What's kind of your purpose for attending?
Gosh, there's so much to experience there. Networking is certainly part of it. So I would say that would have to be the economic driver to being there, but just discovery of music and people is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a great place. If you're not a musician, you get something out of it if you're just working the industry, period. So it's a great thing to do. Hopefully it'll come back to Kansas City in a few years.
Yeah, I hope so. I really like it there.
Yeah.
Another thing I enjoy is the, I think it's the South Western Regional Folk Alliance, SURFA. They do a songwriting prompt, and you draw a piece of paper from a bowl, and it would have something on there. Mine was, I'm okay being alone. And if you wanted to participate on Sunday morning, they had a breakfast, and people would show up, and we'd sign up for the slot, and I think they had like 25 slots. And getting to write a song on the spot and then share it and hear other people's, that's fun and pressured as well.
Yeah, they have regionals all over the United States, and KC Cafe Radio, we've done Far West and Farm, but those are the only two that we've made it to so far. The band name, Isobo, how did you come up with that name?
Kind of as a joke. A friend of mine that would book us was just very enthusiastic, and so I was just kind of pulling his leg a little bit, saying, hey, we got Isobo Artist of the Month. And he goes, man, that's fantastic. And I said, well, it was unanimous. I'm not surprised. So well deserved. I said, well, there's only two people on the board. It's me and Gail. So he goes, well, still, congratulations. So it was just a tongue-in-cheek joke. And then as more and more people wanted to book the band, then we needed a name. And Gail said, why don't we just use that Isobo?
Yeah, that's a cool way to go. So how did you and Gail meet?
Actually, it was at a Christmas time at our church. They were doing a offertory music, and I was on one side of the stage, and she was on the other, and we were the two outsiders there just to do this one song. And I'm a huge Lyle Lovett fan, and so I was like, oh, man, a cello player. I would love to play more with you. And so that was our first time playing together. And then I was playing with a guy that played steel guitar at a coffee shop and wasn't too far from where Gail lived. And I just said, would you like to come play with us? And the neat thing about all of us is that, Gail's classically trained and all that sort of stuff. She studied cello in college, but none of us use charts or read music when we play or anything like that. We just wing it. And that's probably why we've been able to play together for so long, because there's really no expectation of how it's supposed to sound. Each time is a happening, and each time it's just whatever it is at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always entertaining, for me at least, to hear what she might play. And it always sounds great, but it's just freeform in it.
So were you playing as a solo artist before that, or were you working with bands?
No, not really. I would just play occasionally in church. I was not playing as a solo artist at all. I was just playing some at church. And in my 20s, I had thought about going to Nashville and doing songwriting and all that. But it takes an incredible amount of sacrifice, and it's an incredible price to pay. I was dating someone I wanted to marry, and we've been married 36 years now. And I just wasn't willing to give up everything for that dream. And yeah, I wanted a family and all. So I said, well, you know, I'll wait till my children get older and then I'll go back and revisit it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of us do. I mean, that's sort of where I'm at as well. You know, I was kind of pushing the music thing really hard. And then when I became a mom, it was just like, yeah, I think I want to stay home and be with my kids. So I'm not traveling so much and gone all the time. So you have a great band that you play with when you play out live. Can you tell us a little bit about your band?
Sure. It's a 5-piece band. It's Gail on cello and I'm on acoustic guitar. We have a guy named Jonathan Culliper on pedal steel guitar. I first started playing with him when he was around 12. He's 31 or 2 now. And he was considered the best steel guitar player under age 18 at the time. And people like Paul Franklin and Don Helms, who was Hank Williams' steel guitar player, I mean, they just were marveled at this child prodigy. So Jonathan went to Belmont College up in Nashville, and he stayed up in Nashville and continues to record up there, but he'll come down and play with us. It's been great. We have on drums Kirk Sarkisian. He's actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then on upright bass and electric bass, we have Ryan Robertson, who's as good as any bass player out there. When our producer came down to one of our shows, Phil Madero, he heard him and he says, that guy is strong. So somebody asked what my greatest musical talent was, and I said the ability to attract people who are far better than me to play with me.
Yeah. Well, it must be the strength of the songs or just the strength of your musicianship as well that brings people in to play with you, because guys like that are not going to waste their time on people that aren't any good.
Well, maybe. I don't know. We have fun. That's it. We don't practice. We always say our current gig is practice for our next gig.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a low pressure, play from the hip, all heart, no chart, and just try to enjoy the moment with the people that we're playing with and the people we're playing for.
Mm-hmm. It's probably nice for them not to feel pressure, you know, to perform up to someone's expectations and just be out there and have a good time.
I have heard that. And we've had different people join us over the years, and we've kind of, it would get pretty big sometimes, 10 or so folks, and it was just like too much to wing. So we just kind of settled down to those 5. But that is a comment that has been shared, you know, that it's nice to play without a click track and without a chart and just to go out and just make music.
Mm-hmm. So do you come from a musical family? Was there anyone else in your family musical?
My grandmother was musical, and she would pull out pots and pans from her kitchen cabinet, and we could bang on those and so forth. And my mom would sing to us in the car to keep us from fighting with one another on road trips. But other than that, you know, she would drive me to guitar lessons and my brother to drum lessons and that type of stuff.
Does your brother still play drums? Is he still musically inclined?
He is, but he's not a drummer anymore. There was a trip going out to the Grand Tetons, and my dad got in his Winnebago, so he and I sat in the back of it, and I taught him 4 chords and how to strum a boom-chicky sound, and so he's now, you know, onto guitar and Americana and blues music, and he's really good.
Mm-hmm. Is he like pursuing a musical career as well, or is he just doing it for fun?
Just doing it for fun.
Yeah.
My son, who's obviously part of my family, he's off the charts. In fact, he produced our first 3 albums. He's touring since he was 17. He'll be 30 this year. He's been touring with the band Manchester Orchestra. They've been on Kimmel and Letterman and all the late night shows. Of course, Letterman's not doing it anymore. They just got back from a 5th tour in Australia, New Zealand. You know, they've done Europe and Canada and all across the U.S. And their song, The Gold, was just number 1 this past year on the AAA chart, beat out YouTube. He's who I go to for advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience, a lot of talent. They're composers. They've scored movies. eBay took one of the songs from the movie Swiss Army Man that they did called Montage, and they used it last year for the NBA playoffs for their eBay commercial. So
really?
He's very, very talented.
What's the name of the band again?
Manchester Orchestra.
And does he play guitar in that?
Yeah, he's the lead guitarist, and he does background vocals, but his main thing is in the studio. he and Andy Hall, the front man, they started out coming over in my basement when, you know, Robert was in ninth grade. In fact, Manchester's first show was in our garage. So I've known them for years, and Robert and his wife, Mary Alice, Mary Alice is Andy's sister, and they've been boyfriend and girlfriend since they were ninth grade. So he pretty much in ninth grade knew what he wanted to do and who he wanted to marry.
Really? So he had his whole life ready. So you think seeing you play and sing, was that an influence for him? Were you doing that at that time?
Yeah, well, I would always play, but certainly wasn't a hindrance. He very quickly surpassed me in what he could hear and ability and so forth. He's the gifted one in the family.
Well, he had to get it from somewhere.
God.
Yeah, God and good genes. How old were you when you started playing guitar? You said your mom took you to lessons and stuff. About what age did that happen?
When I was in second grade, I got a guitar for Christmas. They wouldn't give me lessons until third grade, so for a year, all I could play was the intro to Secret Agent Man. I wanted to be a Beatle. You know, I figured if I learned chords and got good, that somebody would walk by and say, hey, I know the Beatles, you should play with them. But that never happened.
George Harrison didn't
ever
say.
But I was ready, should it occurred.
It was either you or Eric Clapton, so come and play with the Beatles. So who else did you like, other than the Beatles, who else were you listening to as a kid?
Well, I was a loyal Beatles fan, and that was about all I listened to. And then I got my mom, I asked her what she wanted for Christmas, and she said she wanted an Elvis record. And I said, oh, man, yuck. So I got her this Elvis record, and she put it into the console with next to her Herb Albert Tijuana Brass albums and Andy Williams albums, and she played it. And I'm like, this is good. So I'm ashamed to say that about 6 months later, that album ended up at my bedroom, and I was listening to it. And so I became a huge Elvis fan. Mm-hmm. And then I think on her birthday, she wanted a Hank Williams record. I said, well, I can get you a Hank Williams record, fine. And so I got her that. And about 6 months later, that was up in my bedroom, too. So I kind of got Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis. Those were all big influences, even though it was not current. You know, this was the 70s, you know.
Right. But
that's what I was listening to.
It's interesting that how we as young people kind of go back and listen to stuff from earlier, you know, like in our early life, like when we were little kids, and it becomes an influence on us older. I heard somebody say one time that the music you listen to at 11 years old is kind of what defines you as a musician. So I don't know. I think, you know, I just think about when I was 11, that's when I really started getting into music and listening to music and having music influence me. So I don't know. Might be some truth to that.
That's neat. Yeah. I think for me, it would be the Beatles and the Archies.
Really?
You remember Sugar?
Yeah. That band was made up of like the Wrecking Crew, I think, is who was actually the Archies.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are amazing musicians. Yeah. So you talked about, you know, playing guitar at an early age. So when did you write your first song then?
It was my senior year in high school. It was inspired by a girl that didn't want to be my girlfriend anymore. And so I wrote this song, and it was just kind of a release.
And I know when we were at Focal Lines, you talked about the name of the song and quoted some lyrics from it. Can you tell everybody the name of the song?
Yeah, again, I was a Johnny Cash fan, so I was inspired by one of his songs. It's called From the Trash Can of Your Life, I've Been Emptied. And that was the first line. It goes, you picked me up and you acted oh so sweet. You put me in your can and I loved it in that land. Now it's Tuesday and I'm sitting on the street.
I love that. That sounds like a country song. You should try to get that recorded by somebody. I know that you co-write sometimes with Gail.
No, Gail and I don't co-write just because she's so busy.
Mm-hmm.
She's a children's artist as well, so she does a lot of original music for her work. But I do co-write with other songwriters.
Who else have you co-written with?
Well, notable would be Dan Navarro, Wyatt Easterling, Phil Madeira, Beth Wood, to name a few.
I love Beth Wood. She's wonderful. What have you done with her?
Oh, she's amazing.
What song did you write with Beth?
Well, it's called He Won't Back Down. And we actually did that with kind of a Skype type of thing because, you know, she's up in the Northwest, mm-hmm. and I'm in the Southeast. But, you know, she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's a great performer and beautiful vocalist, too. And I love her songwriting as well. Yeah. Okay. You just mentioned you, like, did songwriting over Skype. Do you usually sit with someone and work together? Are you, like, someone, you're bouncing ideas off of each other? Or is you have the music and they have the words? How do you usually work that out?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know that there is a usually. A lot of times it's, it's all the above. It just depends on the situation. Somebody like a Phil Madeira, I might say, hey, I've got some things I've been working on, and, you know, I might share it with him, and then he might say, if it strikes him, he'll take off and go, and then we'll start ping-ponging back. Whereas I texted Dan Navarro and a concept. I said, hey, I just thought this idea and thought it would be a good fit. And next thing you know, I get a lyrics of a chorus texted back to me. And he goes, your turn. So I said, all right. So we would just kind of ping pong that way, you know. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's face to face, you know, as well. But it just depends. You know, a lot of people who are in the business tour, you know, that's really what you got to do to make a living.
So you just kind of take it where you can, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because I really believe the more you write, the more you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think there's advantages to writing bad songs just to finish. And it's okay, well, I won't use that, but I got mm-hmm. one done, you know. And mm-hmm. so just keep working on writing songs and you know,
yeah.
Write funny songs, sad songs, happy songs, fast songs, slow songs, hillbilly songs, jazz songs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Esobo's all about, right?
Yeah.
So when you write, are you mostly writing on the guitar?
Yes.
And do you have, like, a special time of day, or do you try to write every day, or is it something you think that if you need to write all the time to try to keep that muscle working, or what's your philosophy about that?
I'm not a very disciplined person. I end up writing probably every day or at least 5 days a week. But as far as whether it's 2 a.m. or 10 a.m, it's just how life allows it. Used to be people who wrote songs would have to call to their answering machines and leave ideas, you know, so they can, when they got home, they could listen to them and, mm-hmm. you know, write them down on paper. Now with the iPhone, that can give you accessibility anywhere. Sometimes an idea will just pop into your head and then, you know, you're able to capture it right then and there.
Mm-hmm. So how do the ideas come? Like, for me, a lot of times it's like I'll see a book title, or I'll hear a title of a television show, and I'll think, I need to write a song with that title or something. How does it work for you?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think it's just being an observer of life. And, you know, you listen to people talk. You hear things on TV or the radio, and or somebody will say something uniquely, and you say, hey, that's kind of hooky or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll go to writer retreats where we actually go through exercises. That's where I met Beth Wood. And there's an album that has done well on your radio station called Scary. And that was one that I was at a retreat, and Beth was doing an exercise, and through that exercise, Scary came out. Or like I mentioned at Folk Alliance, with the writer prompt, I just drew a sheet of paper out, and it said, I'm okay being alone. And that was my assignment. And so I just started writing freeform, not trying to rhyme it or anything, just writing stuff about being alone. What would that look like? I did a workshop with Daryl Scott back in December, and he's so phenomenal. If anybody has any interest in songwriting, I so recommend his Song Food workshop. But one of the things he said was, take a situation and make it like a picture, visualize it in a picture format, and then just write about what you see. Writing about what it's like to be alone and what that would entail. And so then you got all that stuff on a sheet of paper, and then when you start trying to rhyme stuff, it's like having a paint palette full of colors. You just go and start lifting them and seeing what makes sense and what makes it for a storyline.
And songwriting is just such a, I don't know, it's a beautifully creative thing to do. If you had to say you had a weakness as a songwriter, what would it be?
I don't know music theory.
So you don't necessarily know what chord's supposed to follow another chord or that sort of thing?
Yeah, which in one sense might be something that's allows me to explore a lot of different things. I think I intuitively know, but I'm a folk writer, you know, mm-hmm. so what did they say, three chords and the truth? Was that Woody Guthrie?
Yeah.
So I could probably make it a lot more interesting if I was really more of a musician. But I just like writing so much. I don't slow down to try to, like I said, I'm not a disciplined person. I don't slow down to to go learn theory.
Yeah, I know when I was writing my first songs as a kid, you know, I would just play these chords. I had no idea what the chords were. And I made songs out of those chords. So sometimes it's a lot more freeing to not know what you're doing. And then, you know, as I got older, I have a music degree, and so I know theory and stuff. And sometimes I find that as a hindrance, but also sometimes it's like if I get stuck, I'm like, okay, I know what chord I can maybe go to here. And so sometimes it helps, but sometimes I think it's not as freeing, you know. So at the same time,
I would love to just play alongside with somebody, you know, whatever they're doing, and just know what to play. I'm not a good sideman because I don't know how to play along with people because I don't know the theory. But I listen to so much music. I mean, I really inhale it. And so through that, I've developed taste of what I like and what I think sounds good. I don't mean it's about me, but just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you learn not stick sharp things in your eye because it hurts, you know? So things that are pleasing, you tend to emulate and follow down that pathway.
So what would you say is your biggest strength as a songwriter?
That's hard for me, but the most consistent thing that people tell me is that I'm prolific and I'm clever.
I would agree with that. Yeah, your lyrics are very clever. So I was looking at your albums last night, your other three albums that you've put out, and one of the albums that I was really intrigued by was an album called Live and Overboard. It's sort of a collection of roots gospel songs. Why did you guys decide to do that album? What was the inspiration for doing that album?
We had no intention of doing an album. It's called Live and Overboard because we were playing them live at our church, and the guy who was running the soundboard just got some great mixes. And this was over like a course of maybe 9 months to a year. They would every now and then bring kind of some hillbilly, you know, rootsy kind of things in there. Actually, the guy who plays bass on that is the one who came up with the idea. He was the music director for the church. He's no longer with us. He got glioblastoma, brain cancer. And passed away, and he's the inspiration for the song Suffer No More that's on the Sobo 4 album. His name is Wade Williams. But anyway, he said, hey, how would you like to do some kind of alt-country stuff at church, you know, maybe 3-4 times a year? I said, yeah.
I listened to parts of the album, and it's got that old, you know, gospel feel to it, and very inspirational. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
On Asobo 4, this one is your fourth album, of course, called 4. How would you say that album is different from your other albums?
Well, it's just me and Gail rather than our band. And we, for session players, we recorded in Nashville. The people playing are Emmy Lou Harris's band, Red Dirt Boys, which is Phil Madera, who produced it, Will Kimbrough, Chris Donahue, and Brian Owings. And Dennis Holt came in and did some drum work on there as well. They brought a whole different feel and vibe to the table. And, you know, they're just phenomenal. And it is amazing, the musicians as they are. They're just equally or more amazing people. They're just so gracious. And it was just a lovely time.
So you didn't feel intimidated by working with these guys who've courted and played with just about everybody?
Well, you asked, did I feel intimidated working with them? The answer is no, because they made it so easy. Did I feel intimidated going into there to work with them? Heck yeah, because Phil didn't want to use a click track. He said, we're just going to play live. And I said, the other albums we did, except for the Live and Overboard, you know, they were all click tracks and, you know, trying to get it all just right. And I said, I just don't know that I can do that, Phil. And he says, if you can't play with these guys, you won't be able to play with anybody. So I said, all right. And soon as I got there, they were just so nice. And all that performance anxiety and everything just went out the window. They were just, like I said, couldn't be nicer people.
So how did you meet
Phil? And they were into it. They were into it. You know, that was kind of nice, too.
Yeah.
They were pros. You know, I don't think they were just punching a clock. They were really trying to, you know, help make the song soar.
Yeah, they probably were, I would guess they were probably enjoying what they were doing. So they were really getting into it. So how did you meet Phil?
Well, I first met him, a buddy of mine told me about him. He saw him at the station in Nashville, and he was coming through Atlanta, where I live, and I saw him in concert there. And he was getting ready to do a songwriting workshop with Scott and Jen Smith of the group Naked Blue up in Maryland. And I couldn't go to that year, but they were doing it again the next year. And so I went there, and then, you know, maybe a few months later, I went back to Nashville and wrote with them there. And we were playing the 30A Songwriters Festival, and I invited them to come down early and stay at my house. And I was just saying that, you know, my son produces, but they're so busy touring with an album that we want to get out. And he said, well, where there's a will, there's a way. I can, you know, I'll be happy to produce you. And I was like, wow. Okay, great. In fact, what happened was 2 days later, while we were down there, my son called and said, hey, I can get you in and record in the spring, because he knew I'd been waiting. And so I told Phil, I said, well, blood's thicker than water, and plus, you know, he's my son. So we went ahead and re-recorded the Journey album with my son, Robert. And then I just circled back with Phil for this next album. And we actually recorded two albums during that time. So we have another one that's ready to be released. We're just, you know, letting this current one kind of go.
Yeah. Well, it's a great album. So you did this in a studio in Nashville, or where did you record it?
Yeah, it's the Butcher Shop Studio. John Prine is one of the owners of it, and it had a lot of neat memorabilia there. Chris Christopherson, you know, signed the wall. Johnny Cash is recorded there. The engineer, Sean Sullivan, got a Grammy for producing Sturgill Simpson's album. So it was just a really cool experience.
So were your other albums done in Georgia then?
Yes.
And was it in a home studio or a regular studio down there? Or?
No. Manchester Orchestra has a house that they built into a studio. They had signed with Columbia Records back in the day, and I think they had a 3-album deal, and they basically took a third of their expense money, and they would buy vintage equipment for the pre-production stuff. And by the time they were done, they've got a world-class studio. It's mainly for their own development and stuff. They'll produce their friends, but if there's downtime, then we would go in there and record.
Wow, that's great. So you got, like, state-of-the-art stuff to work with.
And state-of-the-art talent.
I mean, exactly,
yeah. It's not just because he's my son. He really is that great.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about some of the songs on Sobo 4. One of my favorite songs on there is, and you played this for us at Folk Alliance's Hardwire for Trouble. That's also found a lot of success on the charts. Why do you think that song is being successful?
Because y'all are playing it. you know, it's got just that kind of blues vibe that, you know, we start all our shows with it, and it has a little bit different feel than what most songs feel like, or it is rootsy, I should say. So you can see the people's heads pop up to it, and then the song itself is old as time. It's talking about the fall of man and original sin and just living in a fallen state, you know, without being preachy.
Yeah, it's a fun song to listen to, too. I like that song a lot. Another song I have to ask you about is a song called A Little Bit Like St. Paul. What is that song about? Where did that song come from?
Well, again, that's inspired from, of course, I should be able to quote the Bible, which, not that great a discipline, but there's a part where the Apostle Paul's talking about, you know, the things I want to do, I don't do, and the very things I don't want to do, those are the things I do. And it's like, well, gosh, if he's struggling with that, no wonder I struggle with it. And so that's kind of, you know, the first verse is, there are things I do and things I don't, some things I will, some things I won't, some things I want but don't do still, some things I don't but know I will. That's just totally inspired from that scripture.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful song. I like that song a lot. And then another song that is completely different from that is Hot Stuff.
Yeah.
Is that an original song?
It is.
Because it sounds like an old song, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, kind of ragtime.
Yeah. How did you write that song? Where did that song come from?
You want the truth, I imagine.
The truth and nothing but the truth.
I wasn't sleeping well a while back, and a buddy of mine who's a doctor said, I can prescribe you something to sleep. And I said, okay, I'll take it. And it called it Ambien. And I didn't know what Ambien was at the time. And he's not my doctor. In fact, he's a lady doctor. But he prescribed it for me. And he said, and as a joke, he said, it works best if you take it with a cocktail. So I said, all right. Yeah, but I didn't know he was joking. So I got a scotch and I got the Ambien, and I had the Ambien inside me and I had the scotch right beside me. And I was sitting in my easy chair and I had on flannel PJs and I had this little skinny laptop on my lap. And I don't know if you've ever heard these stories about traveling salesmen that would leave their laptop on their bed and go to dinner, and the laptop fan would suck up the bedspread and the laptop would overheat and it would burn the bed down, it'd burn the room down, the whole hotel would burn down. They'd come back, they wouldn't have a laptop, a bed, or a room. So evidently my PJs knew about that, and so I was out, knocked out cold, and about 3:30 in the morning I woke up to excruciating pain because the fan on my laptop had sucked those flannel PJs up and was overheating, and it burnt on my left knee all the skin off.
I mean,
I had a welt that was probably an inch and a half high. It bursted within less than 24 hours. And to this day, I have no pigment on that side of the skin. So that whole bit about when I grow back the skin I had, and you sat with me, I thought I was your mister. I tried to make it sound like a relationship, but it's really all about getting burnt by that laptop.
That's what you call suffering for your art.
Now that you know the backstory, it'll make a lot more sense.
Yeah, that's very cool. You suffer for your art there.
Yeah.
When you were at Folk Alliance, did you see Victor and Penny? You know who they are? Band here in Kansas City, or it's a band. They do like those old ragtime kind of 40s, 30s, 20s kind of sound. And I heard that song. I thought, wow, that would be a great song for Victor and Penny to try and do. So
I'll pitch it to them.
Yeah. I should send you her information. So Isobo also does like a lot of covers when you guys do live shows. Some of those are like you do Black Dog by Led Zeppelin and stuff. How do you guys decide what covers you're going to do?
Well, the main thing is we don't want it to sound like the original. So we, want to reinvent it to some degree. And then just, will it sound cool? Would we have fun doing it? And would the people listening have fun hearing it? And I would say that we're probably 75% original and 25% covers and that type of, those type of live shows. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to give people a brain break, so they're not having to listen to these songs, especially if they're not familiar with our work, and understand every meaning of every song. And then all of a sudden they can kind of sit back and enjoy something that's already familiar with them, but they still hear it in a unique or repurposed way.
Mm-hmm. So being a Beatles fan, do you cover any Beatles songs?
Yeah, they sure do. In fact, Dan Navarro at Folk Alliance, he had the Cantina Navarro, and there's a video I put out on Facebook. It was 3:30 in the morning the last night, and people were getting up. He was inviting different ones up to play covers, and people just happened to be doing Beatles songs. So I did one that we did, and it's She Loves You by the Beatles, but we do it as a ballad. And there was a cellist playing there, and there was a guy on accordion that just was beautiful. And it's really sounded cool. So I'll email it to you when we get done with this interview.
Oh, that'd be great. I would love to hear that. Because I do, I'll do covers every now and then when I play it out live. And one of the covers that I like to do is a cover of Bad Moon Rising. But I do it very slowed down bluesy way. The song sounds completely different and gives a whole new feel and meaning to the words in it. Because if you listen to that song, it's a very dark song. The lyrics are about pretty much about the end of the world. So, but when you hear Creedence do it, it's kind of this jangly, happy kind of sound to it. So, that's one of my favorite covers to do. So I kind of like taking well-known songs and twisting them, putting them on their head. So that's fun. I'll enjoy it.
Yeah, that same kind of thing. Would you mind if I tried doing Bad Moon that way?
Sure. Yeah, go for it. I do it in a minor key. So just do it in a minor key.
Yeah.
So what other plans you got for the rest of the year? You mentioned you have another CD ready to come out. When is that going to happen, do you think?
I don't know that we'll release it in 2018. We might release it at the beginning of 2019. It's called Asobo 6, so it's we might do a Christmas album.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because we have fun with that, doing the exact same thing we were just talking about, taking songs and repurposing them. I'm heading up to Nashville Friday to do In the Round with a bunch of songwriters Friday night. And then I come back, and then I'll be in South by Southwest. Got a couple showcases there in mid-March. And we're playing some local stuff, Gail and I. Oh, we got a full band live show April 6th at Eddie Owen Presents. So we're doing that April 18th and May 11th. I'm expecting grandbabies from daughter and her husband, and my son and his wife. And so I'm kind of playing it loose so I can be there for that.
Yeah, congratulations. Are those the first grandbabies?
Thanks. No, my daughter has two boys already, and they're both expecting boys, so there'll be four little boy cousins running around. So
that's a lot of trouble.
I hope so.
Oh, that's great. Well,
they're hardwired for it, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure. So here's my James Lipton question. Do you know who James Lipton is?
He's, oh, yeah.
This is my James Lipton question. So, and if, you know, you need time to think about this, what is your favorite song by someone else and why?
Oh, gosh. I could never prioritize one over the other. I just love so many.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be the worst guest on a James Lipton show.
So is there like a Beatles song that you
tell you
favorite
what,
over
I'll
another?
I'll give you the answer. I got the answer. Hey, okay. I can be on James' show now.
Okay.
I'm using it because I love so many kinds of music. I love so many. I have such great respect for so many songwriters that I'm just amazed. But there's one song in particular that it's the song that I wish I could have written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by Chuck Cannon, and it's called Poison. I'm sure you could find it on Spotify or on YouTube or at iTunes. But Chuck wrote a lot with Toby Keith.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote that How Do You Like Me Now and The American Soldier. And he had about half a dozen hits with Toby Keith. He wrote James Michael Montgomery. He got Song of the Year. It was BMI Songwriter of the Year. So he's mainly a songwriter's songwriter.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today on Casey Cafe Radio.
Kathy, thank you. It's so great to reconnect after we got to spend some time together in Kansas City at Focalize.
Yeah. So the new album by Asobo is called Four. And Chuck McDowell is the vocalist and guitarist for the band. And tell people where they can find your music, and tell them a little about your website as well.
Okay. The website is asobo.com. That's E-S-O-E-B-O. So, eclectic selections of everything but opera. And the music can be had anywhere that you have. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on iTunes. It streams on Spotify and Apple Play. We use an outfit called TuneCore, and I think they have it out there streaming on 40 or 50 different outlets. So, and it's on YouTube. You can actually type Asobo 4 into YouTube, and you can listen to the whole album there too.
Okay, yeah. I saw that you had some YouTube as well, so... And then you have some videos on the website that people can look at. Do you have videos on YouTube as well?
Yes, we do. We have a YouTube channel. And then we also, we play a lot with Eddie Owen Presents. And they have a place called EOP Live. So if you go to YouTube and you type in Asobo, or you can even type in Chuck McDowell, either one will get you a lot of stuff that we've done on YouTube. That's
great.
Not necessarily on our channel, just through Eddie's place.
Mm-hmm. Well, the name of the album is Four, and it's by Asobo. And thank you, Chuck McDowell, for chatting with us today on Casey Cafe Radio.
Thank you, Kathy.